All right, folks, let's be real for a minute. This entire weekend, I have been dancing around making these recordings of this episode. I have been aiming for this elusive friend we call perfection. But guess what? I am a procrastinator at heart, and I'm ready to kick my butt and get this episode into gear. I've been caught in the snare of procrastination, thinking everything had to be just so, fearing that I'd leave out something important. But here's the kicker. I'm not perfect, and neither is aphasia, nor life, nor these intricate relationships we navigate every day. So borrowing wisdom from Eric Best, I'm not letting perfect get in the way of very good. Buckle up, we're taking the scenic route through the world of aphasia, imperfections and all.
Welcome to the Listen for Life podcast with Genevieve Richardson. Genevieve is a speech-language pathologist rehabilitating adults with communication challenges after a stroke or due to a neurological impairment. Get equipped with knowledge from experts in the field and professionals you need to know. We'll hear stories and experiences from others who are navigating life with aphasia. So, put your earphones in and take a walk outside. This isn't just a podcast. This is a community, a resource, and a support system. We're in this together. Do life.
Welcome to this episode. If you thought we were diving into a polished, flawless exploration of aphasia, well, I've got some news for you. While embracing the mess, the misturns, the detours that make this journey so deeply human, perfection is definitely overrated. And frankly, it's as graspable as smoke with your bare hands. So with lots of heart and maybe a bit of stumbling, let's explore the rich, complex, and yes, perfectly imperfect world of aphasia. Because sometimes very good is just about the best thing there is. So this episode, we are talking about non-fluent aphasia. I'm your host, Genevieve. I'm a speech pathologist with nearly 30 years of experience later on this year, 2024. And I have a passion for working with families who live with aphasia every day. I am here to help you uncomplicate aphasia. This is the first of many episodes about aphasia because I truly believe, to the tips of my toes, that knowledge is power. If you don't understand the topic, it's hard to ask the right questions, and even worse, it's hard to understand what is possible. So let's jump in. Aphasia is a condition that affects millions of people worldwide, yet it's so often misunderstood. Aphasia can profoundly impact an individual's ability to communicate, but it doesn't affect everyone in the same way. It's as different as fingerprints are different. Broadly speaking, aphasia falls into two main categories. We're going to go with non-fluent and fluent aphasia. And understanding this distinction is crucial, not just for medical professionals, but for families and caregivers striving to provide the best support and care. We're going to explore non-fluent aphasia today. It is characterized by halting, effortful speech, and the struggle to form words and sentences. It's a world where thoughts are trapped by an inability to easily express them. In our next episode, we're going to turn our attention to fluent aphasia, where speech flows smoothly, often lacks meaning or coherence, creating a different set of challenges for communication and understanding. But why is this distinction even necessary? Aphasia is complex and its impact on communication is profound. Even for someone who has just a mild aphasia where they can't always think of their words, something as mild as word finding can stop someone in their tracks from trying to communicate, from avoiding conversations with their loved ones because they're embarrassed when they can't think of their words, to not trying for a promotion at work because they feel shame that they can't get their words out like they did before. The other end of the spectrum is someone who has a severe aphasia, and maybe they can't really understand what is being said around them. Maybe they just glean what's going on based on what they see going on and body language that they're perceiving from others. Aphasia is complicated, but we want to make sure we give you a basis first of differentiating between non-fluent and fluent aphasia, because it has an impact on communication techniques, how we set our goals in therapy, how you as families who have loved ones with aphasia set your goals and expectation, and that we always employ the most effective interventions to improve quality of life and foster more meaningful interactions. So throughout this series, I aim to demystify many of these concepts around aphasia. We're going to hear some real stories about individuals and families. Throughout this series, I aim to demystify the concepts that surround aphasia. I will share real stories and examples from individuals and families navigating these challenges and provide practical advice for dealing with aphasia's day-to-day realities. Whether you're a caregiver, a family member, or someone interested in understanding more about aphasia, this series of episodes is designed to offer insights, strategies, and most of all, hope. So let us jump in to the nuanced world of aphasia. So I'm going to talk about aphasia as if I'm talking to you, the spouse of someone with aphasia. Why am I making this distinction? It's important for me to speak to one of you, because if I make my descriptions too general, if I try to cover the gamut of all that can be occurring with an aphasia, I might lose you. So I'm speaking to one of you in this episode. And I wanted to, again, I'm repeating myself, but I want to make this distinction, because even though what I say may not directly apply to you, it applies to you. Does that make sense? Take this episode and the content and think about how it applies to your situation. Maybe you come to realize after finishing this episode that your loved one doesn't have non-fluent aphasia, but isn't that a good distinction to have? All right, let's go. Welcome to non-fluent aphasia. Imagine being at a family dinner. Everyone is sitting around chatting, sharing stories, couple conversations at this end of the table, one over here at this. But the person with aphasia, they might want to chime in. They may want to share a laugh or hear you say the joke again, but slower so that they can get it. And then they want to jump in with their own comment, express their thoughts, but the words just won't come. It's not only frustrating, it profoundly impacts their willingness to keep trying, to make that connection with others. Understanding non-fluent aphasia is crucial from speech therapists to family members, as it tailors how we formulate our communication strategies. And it is not rocket science, but understanding where a person with aphasia is coming from helps you be empathetic, to show empathy, to try and stand for a minute in that person's shoes so that you can understand what they need. It also takes us a minute to get out of our own head, get out of our own way, and look at how we're communicating. Many episodes I've talked about over the last year and a half, I talk about how we have to stop and smell the roses. Well, that is a true statement on many, many levels. What I mean by it in this context is you need to see how you are communicating. You have to see how your thoughts and beliefs and anticipating of a reaction influences how you deliver a message to someone with aphasia. We all have to look inward so that we can make a change outward. Does that make sense? Whether you're here to learn more about non-fluent aphasia, because you know someone who has aphasia, this episode is a step towards bridging that communication gap. Maybe the person with aphasia is your neighbor. You know someone with aphasia. So listen up. Let's jump in. I keep saying that, but let's jump in. So non-fluent aphasia can also be called Broca's aphasia. It's a type of a language disorder that results from damage to a specific area in the brain responsible for speech and language production. This is often in the left hemisphere of the brain for a right-handed person. And I am right-handed, so I will gesture to the left side of my brain. For me, this is where my language processing area lives. So characteristics of non-fluent aphasia: limited speech output. Individuals with non-fluent aphasia typically produce minimal speech. When they do speak, it's often in short, broken phrases, and they tend to omit smaller words like the and a. This brevity and omission makes their speech sound telegraphic. What does telegraphic mean? Well, think back in the olden days, way before the cell phones, telegraph. That's how you used to communicate over the wires. You know, that whole tapping thing, you know, how many times you tap and what rhythm represents certain words. Well, that's often what you will hear with someone with non-fluent aphasia, if they can speak at all, that is. It's telegraphic. They only put in the big words. And even then, some of those words could be missing. Effortful speech. Speaking can be visibly laborious. It's labor intensive. They may struggle to start speech where each word takes a considerable effort. The struggle, you may feel it in your bones. You see how distressing it can be for both the speaker and as well for you, the listener. Agrammatism. This is a technical term. You may hear it if you're speaking to a speech pathologist. It refers to difficulty with grammar. Sometimes people who have non-fluent aphasia, they leave out function words like prepositions in, on, at, behind, above, below, and articles. Articles are a cat, the dog, a bird. They'll leave out those little words because they're confusing and they are low priority. Verb endings might be left off. If you are saying something that happened yesterday, of course, my example, I keep thinking of irregular past tense verb. Sang, drove, cooked. There we go. Now I got one. Cooked. The ending for cook is present tense. Cooked is past tense. We add an ED to it. The person with non-fluent aphasia may leave off that ED because it's a lot of extra effort to either put it on there or their brain doesn't process it. But perhaps they still mean something that already happened, something that's happened in the past. So when the person with non-fluent aphasia leaves off these verb endings, it can make their speech sound disjointed. And as a result, the listener has to really pay attention. The person with non-fluent aphasia may also prioritize understanding over production. They often can understand speech and language better as compared to their output. They understand and comprehend other speech relatively well, although this varies from person to person. I will preface this by saying we have to look at what the situation is. If it's a quiet conversation with the spouse and they're talking about what you want for dinner, that may be easy. But compare that to being in a restaurant with another couple where it's noisy and loud and busy and people are talking around, they may not have any comprehension in that situation. So it really does vary. Why is non-fluent categorized as non-fluent? It aptly describes the primary struggle faced by individuals with this condition. The flow of the speech is markedly interrupted. Unlike fluent aphasia, where speech remains smooth and rhythmic despite being nonsensical and jumbled, non-fluent aphasia is characterized by a stark reduction in the quantity of speech and its effortful, halting nature of verbal expression. This categorization between non-fluent and fluent highlights the contrast in speech production capabilities, providing a foundation for understanding that helps inform not only treatment, but communication strategies. So I have an example for you. We're going to talk about John. And John is a dedicated amateur chef who suffered a stroke. John used to regale his family with details of his culinary adventures, you know, what it's like being in the kitchen, or when, you know, they burned the soup and they had to start all over, whatever the case was, his stories of cooking and interactions in the kitchen. Now, John knows exactly what he wants to say, but he can't find the words and he can't articulate, he can't say his experiences. If he's cooking in the kitchen now with his wife, asking for a simple tool like hand me the spatula becomes a frustrating ordeal. Not because he's forgotten what it's called, but he can't get the words out. And there's many different reasons why he may not be able to get those words out. His family learns to communicate with him using yes and no questions so that they can get to the gist of his intention quicker. They use things like visual cues, like, did you want this spatula or this spatula? And they need to provide a whole heap of patience so that they can adjust their interactions to accommodate his communication needs. Understanding non-fluent aphasia in this way, recognizing the characteristics and the reason behind why we categorize this kind of halting, effortful speech as non-fluent, it's crucial. Why are we differentiating? Because the distinction lays in the foundation of how a speech pathologist in treatment is going to work in therapy, how she's going to educate and train communication partners to maximize communication at home, and also like things for setting a home treatment program. We have to understand completely what this person with aphasia is going through and setting realistic goals and expectations. Progress and recovery. This is another reason why we need to understand non-fluent aphasia. There's a motor speech disorder called apraxia. You can hear it referred to as apraxia of speech. There may or may not also be a dysarthria, which is a weakness of the muscles of the mouth that makes speech sound a little slurred. But typically, it's an apraxia of speech that can accompany and complicate non-fluent aphasia. So, again, it's important to understand the why. Where in the brain did this deficit happen? Where was blood flow interrupted? Where was the head injury? Where was the brain bleed? And that helps paint a picture based on what we know about areas in the brain. It also helps us to speculate about what could be wrong with speech. And that's where a speech pathologist comes in. We have to do an evaluation. And I'll tell you what, even after the formal evaluation is done, we are constantly assessing a person to see if well, can we try this? And are we making inroads in this way? And if that way doesn't work, then we pivot and we try a different way. All of this falling back on what we understand about speech and language, knowing where in the brain the deficit is, what the strengths are of the person, what the difficulties are for that person. And we are always trying to find a new way. So let's talk about Maria, whose husband has non-fluent aphasia. She helps her husband communicate because she keeps a pretty consistent schedule at home so that his needs and wants can be accomplished a little easier because there's context, there's routine, there's things she knows about him and what he needs and what he wants so that they can try and decrease some of that frustration at home. Let's think about getting dressed. So you need your husband to get dressed, and you know that if you set out his clothes or give him two choices of outfits, that you can probably get him to make a choice. Even better yet, say which one he wants. But that takes some structure and repetition. So Maria, that's what she does in the morning. She sets out two different outfits and she sets up the environment so that when he comes out of the bathroom after getting cleaned up and it's time to get dressed, she gives him like leading questions so that he can fill in the blank so he can say the word. Sometimes she has to give him the first letter sound of the word he wants. And then she'll hold up the red shirt and the green shirt. Honey, did you want the, you know, and give him that first sound, or do you want the green shirt? And then Maria's learned that if that first sound clue doesn't help, then she can give the first syllable, the re, and the gr, you know, much more of a syllable cue. And if not, then she can go to the next level. Do you want the red or the green? And if he points to the green, then she works to help him say green. And if she can get him to say green, she helps him to say green shirt. And if she's really on her game and he's up for it because they've been trained to do this, she might be able to say, she might be able to model and get him to say, I want green shirt. That's a lot of work, isn't it? But that is sometimes what it takes to help the person with non-fluent aphasia get out their words, giving them a choice, making them feel like they are not just being taken care of, but that they get to be involved in their everyday existence. So that's just one example from Maria. So let's review some of the basic symptoms of non-fluent aphasia. Limited speech output. Individuals may speak very little and often use fewer words than typical to express an idea. Their speech might be limited to short, simple sentences or even single words. They have effortful speech. Speech may appear strained and cause them a lot of effort. You might notice a visible struggle. You might feel and see their frustration. There's going to be pauses. Agrammatism is a hallmark of non-fluent aphasia, where they leave out some of the little function words, is, and, the, a, and also verb endings might be left out, making sentences sound fragmented. So if you're hearing a fragmented sentence and you're rushing around trying to do something while you listen at the same time, you're going to miss it. And that's part of where I said at the beginning of the show, stop and smell the roses. When you're communicating with someone with non-fluent aphasia, you do need to stop. You do need to give them your eyeballs. You need to be looking at them, giving them space, giving them time to try. And then if you know how to help them, if you've been trained, hopefully you have been trained by your speech pathologist, how to supplement, how to cue to try and get your husband to say it, that is powerful. Also, just as a side note, that's how you still keep a connection with your husband. You have to stop to help. You can't be cooking dinner and trying to listen to him at the same time. You're going to miss some of the subtle things he's trying to say, his intention. You might not be seeing his body language, his facial expression, if you're busy cooking and not burning yourself with a hot pot of boiling water. Word finding difficulty. People with non-fluent aphasia often know the words they want, or at the very least, they've got, this is my hand signal for a lemma. That's the concept. That's the thought. Once you light up a lemma, then you have to come up with the word, which is a lexeme. That's the letters put together. That's pairing all the sounds together to make a word, and that word has meaning. Does that make a little bit of sense? This is something we will talk about in the future. I just want to touch on it right now. The person with non-fluent aphasia, they may have their concept, but they may not be able to get the word. And even if they could get the word, they may not be able to get their mouth to produce that word because either they don't know how to make a G, if saying the word green, they may not even be able to put their tongue and jaw and lips and everything in the right spot to make that sound. They may have no knowledge of how to make that sound. They may be able to still make that sound in the context of imitation, copying you, but they may not know how to do it on their own. So there can be word finding difficulty in addition to all this effortful speech. Typically, understanding is better than speech output. So what are some of the observations a spouse might make or what family members might see when they are interacting with a person who has non-fluent aphasia? They see struggle to find, to form words. Short sentences that lack all the little words. They're going to see frustration. They might see the use of gestures. Oh, and let me throw this in. There could also be limb apraxia with the person who has non-fluent aphasia, which means doing something as simple as a thumbs up, thumbs down, they can't do it. They can't program it. Maybe they know that they want to do it. Maybe they see you, the clinician, or the loved one, the spouse, trying to get them to do it, but you have to do this hand over hand movement. And, you know, maybe they're doing other things to try and get this thumbs up. So they can have limb apraxia. So then that makes it hard for them to compensate with their effortful speech by using gestures. So often in therapy, we also have to address limb apraxia in addition to apraxia of speech when we're talking about non-fluent aphasia. So I want to do a little bit of a dive into some variations of non-fluent aphasia because there's several types and not everybody fits neatly into one of these categories. We're going to talk about three different aphasias that fall under non-fluent. I've been talking a lot about Broca's. You will find that that is the big heading. That's often many people get lumped into Broca's aphasia when they have a non-fluent aphasia. So Broca's, they have expressive difficulty. They struggle to produce speech, telegraphic speech. They can also have difficulty with reading and writing, and they can have limb apraxia on top of everything else. So what could a family expect? Family should prepare for conversation where the person with Broca's aphasia understands that you set up the environment and talk in such a way that they can understand what's going on, what the conversation is about, but that they have the opportunity to respond in short, simple phrases. Maybe you don't ask, how's your weather today? That's a very big open-ended question, right? And that can cause a whole lot of comprehension and conceptualization problems. But if you said, is the weather nice? Like if you're talking on your phone to your dad that's in Pittsburgh and you say, Dad, is the weather nice? then he can respond yes or no, or, you know, with just a simple word. Patience is key, and encouraging nonverbal forms of communication, such as gestures when possible or drawing, helps with communication. So let's take your dad in Pittsburgh. It's probably better to do a Zoom call or a FaceTime call or whatever it's called on Android phones than to just have an audio only call, because the person with aphasia, and it doesn't matter which aphasia they have, they need this information. They need your facial expression. They need to see your body language. They need to see if you're attending to them with eye contact or not. You would think that they might not realize it if you're on Zoom with them and you're over here checking your email and you're like, yeah, yeah, dad, yeah, yeah, whatever. He knows that you're not with him. So don't do that. So let's talk about transcortical motor aphasia. And why does it differ? Why does it get its own name? And how is it different from Broca's aphasia? Speech production. Like Broca's, transcortical motor aphasia involves difficulty with speech production. However, they may have a slightly easier time forming coherent sentences as compared to someone with Broca's aphasia. So here's an interesting distinction. Echolalia, which is the tendency to repeat phrases and sentences spoken by others. They might be able to repeat things back easily and quickly, but forming original speech, original words, original sentences is much, much harder. So they may also have preserved repetition. What on earth is that? That means they can often repeat, just like that echolalia. Echolalia can also be repetitive. They might say it over and over. But with transcortical motor aphasia, they can often repeat words or phrases quite well, even when they have trouble initiating speech independently. So what to expect? Expect that communication may include repetition of words and phrases, but spontaneous speech is much more difficult. Let's move on to global aphasia. Now, global aphasia, just like you might assume by the term, means that it impacts every single aspect of language. And this is the most severe form of aphasia. It impacts both expressive and receptive language skills. They may have significant difficulties with speaking, listening, reading, and writing. Limited verbal output. They may not even be able to respond to yes-no questions. They may not have the comprehension to be able to respond to yes-no questions. What is the social and emotional impact? These profound communication challenges lead very quickly to social isolation, emotional distress for both the individual and their family. What can you expect if you have a loved one with global aphasia? It requires patience, creativity, and a laser focus on nonverbal communication methods. The speech pathologist may very well be working on a communication system, whether it's something simple like pointing to pictures, trying to train a couple of gestures to get basic wants and needs met by that person. I'm going to wrap up this episode. This was about telling you about non-fluent aphasias, Broca's aphasia, transcortical motor aphasia, and global aphasia. There's so much more to these aphasias, and we'll get into that in future episodes. But I wanted to start painting the picture and helping you to differentiate between non-fluent and fluent. And then future conversations, we'll get into many more of the details. So what do you think? Does your loved one who has aphasia, are they more on the non-fluent side? Or do you think perhaps they're on the fluent side? Maybe you need more information. So tune in to the next episode where we get into fluent aphasia. So I just want to thank each of you for being here listening to this episode. Whether it's about aphasia, or any topic we've covered, we want you to get answers. The best way to do that is to check out our podcast website, listenforlifeaphasiapodcast.com. On there, we have a section where you can put in a question about aphasia, or maybe it's communication strategies for non-fluent aphasia. You can be general, you can be specific. What this search box does is it taps into all of the information we've covered on these podcast episodes and other information that maybe you've not heard, but it pulls from my content, from my experience over the years working with aphasia. And it's an excellent place to start asking questions and getting the information you want. Additionally, on this website, if you have a specific topic in mind, we have organized the episodes by content, by topic. There's lots of different ways to get in and get your questions answered. Ultimately, I want you to remember that you are not alone on your journey. With each question that you ask and every answer you receive, we all grow stronger and more connected. Reach out to me, share your experiences, and let's keep building the future where every voice is heard, every challenge is met with compassion and resilience. Thank you for tuning in. Until next time, remember, understanding evolves, recovery is redefined, and together we can uncomplicate aphasia.
Thanks for tuning in to the Listen for Life podcast. We hope you feel empowered and supported. Head over to listenforlifepodcast.com to see the show notes with links and information from today's episode. Do you have a topic, a resource to share, or a guest recommendation? Inquiring minds want to know. Let us know in the comments section. Wishing you a fabulous week.